It's good to be with you today. I appreciate the opportunity, although I'm sorry for the circumstances that brought it about. One quick announcement, I have added to the already full bulletin a brief singing by the choir of Brian Wren's hymn, Good is the Flesh, at the time for meditation after the sermon. So don't be surprised when the choir starts to sing. I heard a new word last week from Ann Cansfield. She's the pastor at the Greenpoint Church in Brooklyn, where many of our high school students go for mission trips. She's also a chaplain for the New York City Fire Department. And last week, after one of her EMTs died on the job, she wrote a really powerful Facebook post about grief and loss. She introduced the word Coomerspec. And I should have checked with Anne, because I'm probably mispronouncing that, but I'm not going to use the German word much. It's a German word that means, literally, grief bacon. Grief bacon. And it refers to the excess weight that is gained from sorrow. And when I heard that, I thought, oh, that makes a lot of sense to me. I'm carrying around a lot of Coomerspec these days. But today, I want to use the word grief bacon to refer to all the heaviness that we might be carrying. Loss, anxiety, illness, anger, sadness, failure, shame. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling a little weighed down with grief bacon these days. I have a bad habit of checking my email before I get out of bed in the morning. And that usually includes skimming through a couple of political articles from the New York Times and the Washington Post. And then after I finish that, I really just want to pull the covers back over my head and go back to sleep. There's a lot of anxiety floating around right now. The country, the denomination, healthcare, immigration, civilians killed in Iraq, the influence of Russia in the election. And even if we try not to read about it and think about it all the time, I wonder how much toll anxiety has taken on our bodies. Headaches, stiff neck, bad back, an angry stomach. Perhaps the anxiety has us operating more out of high alert, like all the time. The adrenaline is always there, and we're always ready to punch somebody, figuratively, if not literally. Sometimes it feels like there is so much boiling inside that we might just explode into pieces. Ezekiel talked to people who carried a lot of that grief bacon with them. The Israelites had been forced out of their land. They were living in exile. And for them, everything had exploded into pieces. Our bones are dried up, they said. Our hope is lost. They had made a mess of pretty much everything, and now they felt the consequences of their actions. It seemed that God had abandoned them. They were dry bones in the desert. Mary and Martha also had their share of grief bacon. Their brother was dead, and that was bad enough. But they were even more upset because they felt that Jesus could have healed him if only he had come in time. They had such deep faith in Jesus, and he had let them down. Now, Jesus knew that he was trying to make a theological point about God's power, but they didn't know that, and they felt betrayed. But Jesus also felt overwhelmed by their sorrow and the sorrow of their friends. He was so deeply moved that he wept. And most of us can probably identify with that. Sometimes we too burst into tears because we are just so overwhelmed and our bodies can't manage it anymore. And the fact that Jesus wept in this story ought to give us permission to do our own weeping when we need to. Because crying is not a sign of weakness and it isn't unmanly or childish. It's the way that our bodies deal with pain and loss. The body knows how much grief bacon we are carrying. A number of years ago, I had experienced a loss, and I took my son to Air Bud, which is a movie about a golden retriever who plays basketball. Now, that doesn't sound like a tearjerker, right? But about halfway through the movie, I was crying uncontrollably, and it really had nothing to do with Air Bud, the golden retriever, but it did have something to do with the theme of loss that was subtle in the movie. The body knows how much grief bacon we're carrying. There's so much pain and loss in these stories, and yet the loss does not have the last word. There is healing and redemption here. And the thing that's so significant about it isn't just spiritual. It's physical, and it's fleshy. Ezekiel saw those very dry and very dead bones. And then God's Spirit moved over that desert, and God's Spirit put those bones together, bone to bone. And then God's breath kept blowing, and the bones got muscle on them. And then the muscles got skin. And then God's breath blew some more, and those bodies got breath, and they became alive. And God can breathe God's breath into our own death and loss and anxiety. And in the gospel story then, Jesus brought Lazarus back to life. Imagine their stunned surprise when Lazarus staggers out of that tomb with still the grave cloths on his face and his hands and his feet. That is a tangible, physical, bodily miracle. Jesus didn't say to Mary and Martha, "Oh, he will live on in your hearts," or "he will be raised at the last day." Jesus raised him from the dead at the moment and showed how much the body and life and flesh are valued. And that's good news for us, too. Because the body has not always been valued, has it? The flesh is something sometimes we're a little skeptical about. We've sometimes been told in church that sex is bad, that flesh is bad, that bodies are bad, that they have dangerous desires that need to be controlled. And sometimes that's true. But if God values the flesh enough to put skin and muscle on those dry bones, and if God values the body enough to become flesh in Jesus, and if God values the body enough to raise Lazarus and Jesus from the dead, then maybe we should start to realize that God values our bodies too. And maybe we should value our bodies the way that God does. So I wonder if one way, it's not the only way, but if one way to get through this grief bacon, the dry bones, the disillusion and despair that we feel, is by nurturing the simple pleasures of the flesh. Because it is the body that anchors us to the world. It's the body that kind of holds together everything that's flurrying around. So how do you care for that body? How do you care for that flesh? Anne Lamott says that the best self-care is clean sheets, hot baths, and long hikes. So that's one place to start. Another way to think about it is, what do we put in or take into our bodies? What if we turned off the television news and listened to Beethoven instead? What if we quit reading so many news articles and read a novel instead? What if we volunteered to play with children? What if we took more time for friendship? What if we experienced the pleasure of two bodies talking together or walking together? Some people might say that this is selfish or naive, or that it's a waste of time in the midst of so much craziness in the world. We should do something productive, right? But God so often brings grace and healing through our bodies. When you see the sunset over the lake, when you hear the voice of your grandchildren, when you smell coffee brewing, if you like that sort of thing, when you ride your bike on a beautiful day, when you get a hug. God is the source of all healing, and God is the source of the new life in these stories. But we can't control God, and yet so much of the healing that happens in the world and needs to happen in the world, we can't do. We can't fix the government. We can't fix the denomination. We can't fix the cancer diagnosis or the macular degeneration or the abuse we've suffered in the past. And yet we do have the power to care for our own flesh and the flesh of others. And that isn't just New Agey self-help talking. I think God does a lot of God's healing through our actions. We can decide to put those sheets in the washer. We can decide to cook a decent meal. We can decide to go for a bike ride. Those choices that we make can be God's breath blowing through us. And we can bring that same kind of grace to other people. Simple kindness to other people and ourselves. We can value their flesh and our flesh by feeding it, by caring for it, by treating it well. We can look for the beauty in the world and be grateful when we see it. I was sitting outside yesterday in the sun reading commentaries, and I watched a neighbor go by with her walker. And she had an incredibly slow pace and kind of a little hitch in her step, and it was pretty clear that one of her legs wasn't working. So she had these tiny little steps that she moved. And I thought, there's a woman who has not let her body get the best of her. Such courage, such persistence, such strength. I wondered today if during communion, you may have your own rituals, and I don't want to interrupt those, but as people come forward for communion, I wonder if you might look at people. And I wonder if you might look at their bodies and appreciate the fact that many of the people in this place that you know have experienced failure and pain and grief and loss and disease. And yet you will see so much strength and so much beauty and so much love in the flesh of the people around you. Amen.